Hello and welcome to the Global Observatory. Today I am joined by two members of civil society of South Sudan, David Deng, who is the research director for the South Sudan Law Society, and Anith Dewal, who is founder and director of the Roots Project South Sudan. Thank you for joining me today. The first question I'd like to ask to both of you is if you could outline some of the root causes of this ongoing conflict in South Sudan. And specifically, how do these connect to the role that civil society organizations can play in restoring peace?
I think the root causes are many. We have tribalism, we have corruption, we have impunity, we have the previous war, we have lack of development, we have a whole range of issues. And what that highlights is basically how everybody at all levels is involved and can be involved to reversing these issues. So the work that we have to do as civil society has to be as multifaceted and multi-layered so that we can resolve the problems that caused this violence. So many things have been ignored, development has been put off because of violence, but there's violence because there's no development. So opportunities have been ignored, opportunities came and went, and I think everybody has to be more proactive when the opportunities are there to be able to instill, you know, the activities, the interventions to heal the nation, to heal the people, to provide the opportunities for accountability and reconciliation and everything else.
David, what role can civil society play in this process, given some of these causes that Anith outlined?
Well, I think that sometimes the causal factor is not the most important thing, that conflict can be triggered by anything, by a land dispute, by, in this case, a political dispute within the ruling party. But the real question is, what are the factors that allow the conflict to proliferate and to become entrenched? And I think there we go to some of the real core governance crises that the country has been suffering with for nearly a decade now, ranging from an almost complete inability to deliver public services. There are high expectations for what the end of the war in 2005 and independence in 2011 would mean for South Sudanese, but the government has utterly failed to deliver on any of those issues of the abuses committed by the security sector, which started long before December 15th. Constitutional reform process. All of these things are really basic problems which have set the stage for the conflict. And in order to bring the conflict to an end in a way that's sustainable, they need to be addressed. And I really think that civil society has a unique role to play in that these are the issues that we are most familiar with. We've been following them for many years. Taking constitutional reform as an example, civil society, what we've done in the past few years around the constitutional review process is light years ahead of what the government has accomplished in the same period of time. So I think we have a sort of established capital which we can use to invest in some of these processes and make them successful.
Previous peace agreements in South Sudan have largely been the exclusive affairs of the elite and often the warring parties. Does that need to change this time around, and how can it change?
Certainly. I mean, that's one of the fundamental shortcomings of past peace processes. We see the same people who were left out of past peace processes in South Sudan are the very same ones who are instigating and promoting this conflict. Other armed groups who weren't involved in the negotiation of the Comprehensive Peace Agreement in 2005 are the ones who now have been defined. They haven't been included in part of the whole process up till now. And the ownership of the peace has been for the SPLA, which has been a tremendously divisive factor in South Sudanese society. So this time around, I think there's a general recognition that the process must be inclusive, that it must involve other groups, not just armed groups, but other groups who do not use violence and force as a way of getting what they want, and a recognition that the incentivization of violence, if the only way for you to have voice within this system is for you to be armed, then you're just going to incentivize more militarization of society. So I think there's at least an intellectual recognition that something needs to be done differently. Of course, the devil is in the details, and the challenge will be for IGAD, for the AU, for regional and international organizations to make sure that it happens in practice and to give the support that's necessary for this to happen in a meaningful way and in an inclusive way.
Anith, women have been specifically targeted as part of some of the conflict in South Sudan. On the other hand, women have often been a force for bringing communities together among South Sudanese. What barriers do women face in participating in the peace process this time around and in peace building more generally?
Women's roles in South Sudan has always been limited, very unfortunately. The women were the ones responsible for the reconciliation of the SPLM in the 90s and also played a very active role in the Comprehensive Peace Agreement. And it's a shame that they're always sidelined. Women are the most vulnerable, women are the most silenced, but women are some of the most hardworking people within the communities. I think that support for women can come on so many different levels because there's so many different things that affect women's participation. And it could be responsibilities in the home, it could be the fact that they have not been given the confidence to be able to participate in political affairs. But I think women are the ones that are actually seeing the bigger picture and the better picture. And it's a very logical intervention dealing with women because they're the ones who can reconcile. They're the ones who care about their kids. They're the ones who take care of them. They're the ones who make the home and protect the home. So women's participation is extremely important in this. And in terms of reconciliation, I think women are the only ones that can actually, well, I don't think that they're the only ones that can, but a very big portion, because they will work with the youth, they will work with their children, and also their husbands. So I think the support that goes to women has to be, again, also on different levels, so that we can have something more sustainable. And even after the peace process, the women's role has to still be there, not like after the CPA.
Now, a question for both of you. The UN has been intimately involved in Sudan and in South Sudan since its inception. What is the most critical step that international actors, including the UN, can take to help restore peace and stability in South Sudan and then move forward with meaningful reconciliation and peace building? David?
I think the steps they've taken thus far should be acknowledged and credit should be given where it's due. We've seen Secretary General travel to South Sudan. Immediately before that, the Secretary of State, John Kerry, traveled. There's this huge diplomatic push, which was instigated in part because of a recognition of the looming catastrophe in South Sudan, and not just people who are being killed because of a direct result of the conflict, but the worsening humanitarian situation and the very real risk of widespread famine. So I think keeping up this diplomatic pressure, keeping the pressure on the parties to agree and to stop the violence and to provide access for the humanitarian support, all of that can't be understated. Then also support for different initiatives that are underway. So the mediation process needs support. The Commission of Inquiry, which was recently announced by the African Union into violations of human rights and humanitarian law. I think there's a very critical role that international community can play in terms of providing support to that and making sure that certain minimum standards are adhered to, making sure that amnesties are not a part of any agreement that comes out of this process underway in Addis, and making sure that accountability features into the process. One thing is for sure, if we leave it to the parties, these issues won't be addressed, and it really requires a sustained commitment and push on the part of international actors.
Thank you. Anith, anything to add on the role of international actors and how they can support this process moving forward?
Yes, something quite important to add. I think that the leadership of the UN, the international community, have a very big role to play in actually looking and addressing and being vocal about the actual environment in which everything that everybody is talking about can actually happen. This is not something that we should ignore. This is not something that we should turn a blind eye to. What are the possible scenarios based on the political arrangements, the security arrangements? Is it going to be possible to deal with reconciliation in the various options that we have, in the power sharing, And the pressure has to come from way up there in order to give us the chance, in order to have a country that we can actually live in. I think that's one of the most important things that the international community needs to focus on, because pushing for a peace agreement that we've already seen with the same people that we've seen before, it's not speculation. It's here and now, and we have all the evidence pointing to this is what happens. So we can't do the same thing, and we can't be silent. And as civil society, we want to see the things that we want to see. We want peace, unity, institutional reform, reconciliation, development. Is it going to be possible under the conditions that are being created right now? I think everybody needs to ask themselves those questions and be honest, because the people of South Sudan are depending on it.
Excellent. Aniyat Dhawal, David Dang, thanks for joining us today.